And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Happy December. Yesterday was the first full day of meteorological winter.
It was.
And it sure looks like it outside.
Well, it does, but again, it's not a surprise. I mean, ho, 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 it's December. And we're seeing a little bit of still flurries in the air. But I think that folks just have to, one more reminder to slow down. I know that there were folks coming into Fargo today for North Dakota Ag Association's annual meeting, and there's a lot of slipping and sliding, especially around the Grand Forks region.
Yeah, and we still have some snow showers out there. We're seeing breaks in the clouds. We'll see some sunshine from time to time, and then we'll see these occasional snow showers pop up throughout the early afternoon. We're not looking for anything additional, but right when you get the driveway cleaned off or the sidewalk cleaned off, you'll get these snow showers coming overhead. But we're getting some sun mixed in, so that's good. But temperature is really not going to move a whole lot this afternoon, stuck in the teens across the area. And we've got some pretty, let's just say wintry-like weather coming our way as we head into Wednesday. Not so much falling snow, but man, the winds are really going to pick up. But tomorrow's still breezy out of the south instead of the north, with highs warming up a little bit tomorrow, mid-20s. But Wednesday, a sharp cold front is going to hit the area in the morning. We'll have a morning high in the teens and then steady to slowly falling temperatures all day. The big thing on Wednesday is a lot of wind with wind gusts at or maybe even a little over 40 miles an hour out of the northwest and occasional snow showers. So visibility could be a problem with all this freshly fallen snow blowing around on Wednesday. So those east-west roadways on Wednesday could be a little bit tricky. But the good news is, and Bridget, you'll like this, for tailgating by the weekend, we'll have temperatures in the 30s.
Will we have wind? That's what matters right now.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Probably a little bit out of the south.
Okay.
Yeah.
Define a little bit.
I'll look.
Fine.
I didn't really concentrate too much on Saturday. Well, I just saw the warmer weather and knew that you and the majority of the Bison faithful will like the warmer weather out tailgating, that's
well,
for sure.
We will. You know, I think the reason I ask about the wind is the difference is how much structure do you have to put up? Where do you have to block? How do you have to set up to block the wind? Do you have to put all your sides on your tent? Do you just have to put a couple? That's what kind of makes a difference for folks is getting ready out there. But it's no different than farmers who are putting up windbreaks for livestock right now. They're making sure that all of their animals are protected and out of the wind, because like we talked about last week, when you have that, you know, miles per hour of wind, every time the wind goes up a couple miles per hour, it's as though the temperature drops another 20 degrees for animals. Now they got to fight pretty hard to stay warm. And so we want to make sure that they're being safe. You know, right now, ground is certainly frozen up. So if you were worried that it was soft from previous rain and you didn't want to start hauling grain, now you probably can. And I'd say it's likely a time that a number of shop projects are going on. Things are being moved indoors as equipment's being worked on and gets ready to roll for next year already. Right. Hopefully we don't have any big surprises when you start bringing in those combines from harvest.
So right now, Saturday, it will get windier throughout the day. So early tailgate doesn't look too bad.
It'll be fine.
But by after the game, it looks pretty windy.
Well, by after the game, most everybody will have all their stuff cleaned up.
And then, most of it probably won't care after the game, after a win.
We'll see how things go. So also a big thank you to so many who joined us last night for our benefit for Jace Denman. Jace is one of our hosts here. He does the morning show with Bonnie Amistadi. Also, Jace does sports, and he's even filled in a time or two here on Weather and Ag in Focus. And a huge thank you to him for being the guy, for all the things that he has done here for us. And then to you for coming out, supporting us through the silent auction, the free will offering for the spaghetti feed. Just truly enjoyed having so many people stop to say hi.
And just everybody out at the Moorhead American Legion, they are such a great group. The riders out there, the whole crew.
Fargo Force came by. Jace does a lot of work with the Force.
Right.
And so got to meet a number of the hockey players. So thanks to everybody. And if you did win a silent auction item, you'll get notified by phone. And those things will be readily available tomorrow, starting here at the studio, for you to pick up if you left before the auction ended.
Yeah.
And we'll keep you posted.
And once we get a tally we can pass that along too. We don't have a tally yet on how much money was raised, but
people were pretty tired by the end of the night. I think it was a big day. They just wanted to get things cleaned up, and though today is the tallying and planning.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So it's it was for a great cause, and Jace is continuing to do a little bit better day by day, and we'd love to hear that for our coworkers. So other than that, it was a quiet weekend. I ran into some snowmobilers. And
hopefully nobody got hurt.
Nope. No.
It took you a minute.
It took a minute to click. And they said, we're joking with them. Hey, is there enough snow out there? And there is in the ditches.
Yeah.
He said, we've already put on more miles today than we did all of last year.
Yeah. And
so
we're actually
that's great
seeing,
news.
You know, ice thickening really well in a number of places. I've seen anywhere from 6 to 10 inches of ice, depending where you are.
Okay, and I've seen six.
Yep. It's clear ice. That's the really important part. It's good ice. Mm-hmm. It's clear ice. We want to continue that trend. And even with highs in the 20s coming up this week, I think we're still going to continue to, especially at night, see ice being made.
Without a doubt. And now, again, we will warm up, though, next weekend. But
those with livestock don't love that ice is thickening up. That means you're fighting waterers to get water fountains busted open.
Yeah.
If that's happening, and believe me, I know this sounds a little silly, damage can be done to yourself while you're trying to break open an ice fountain or a water fountain that's got ice on it. I have seen smashed fingers, hitting the leg with a pry bar.
Oh.
All sorts of stuff happens. You know, if you're wielding an axe trying to bust open ice on a water tank, please be careful. But there's a cooperative in South Dakota that decided to take safety a little bit further. AgTegra has a lot of locations across South Dakota and even into South Central North Dakota. And what they did was paired up with a emergency room doctor to do first aid training. It was voluntary if you on staff wanted that training, because they know that in some cases, ambulances can be 45 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
That's just to get an ambulance to you. That doesn't include getting the volunteers to drive the ambulance and so much more. And minutes count in emergency situations. So a lot of employees, especially truck drivers, went through the first aid training. That means that they might be on site and even carrying first aid bags at a location when an accident happens. Or they may come across an accident scene while they're out there putting on miles. And so thank you to cooperatives like AgTegra for doing that, where they wanted to step up and be a part of their community. It's come in handy in a number of instances where, again, it could be an on-site accident. It could be something happening at a neighboring farm, but you're an employee who was trained. And so they're just doing a great job of becoming first responders through AgTegra. That's a great benefit from their jobs.
Always good to know first aid when you're...
Yes.
Miles and miles away from...
And we live in the Dakotas. Help. Most everything is miles and miles away. Absolutely. So that's one of the things that folks are doing right now to help others, just like we had our benefit last night for Jace. You know, additionally, we've had lots of discussions about what's going to happen for farm profitability for 2024. And having our regular guest, Greg Steeman with Starian Bank, join us, you know, like you said, they're watching very closely what's happening with operating loans. The American Banking Association, as well as Farmer Mac, which is the Federal Ag Mortgage Corporation, came out with their statistical analysis of 2024, and they believe that only 58% of farmer borrowers will be profitable in 2024. 58%. That is down from the previous year's 78%.
Wow.
We know that ag is very cyclical. That's not a surprise. That happens all the time. But right now, the optimism is really good for livestock producers. If you have beef animals in particular, those prices are up as you're selling your calf crop. But the concern is when you look at row crop farming, we have depressed commodity prices, and producers are very concerned about liquidity and their farm income overall. So right now, bankers are watching with the credit quality along with the loan deterioration that could happen for the next 12 months. So they're going to tighten up their underwriting standards and really rely on working with their borrowers. What's nice when you are farming is oftentimes you have a pretty tight relationship with your banker. You know, if you're going in to borrow $1 million, $1.5 million on a regular basis, you're probably going to know that person quite well.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, you know, those relationships matter in times like these when you have that discussion with them. And I had a farmer friend tell me in July, he called his banker and said, I think we should run projections for the year on what I think I'm going to have for yield and where we're going to be at for commodity prices and just see what the year is going to look like. And his banker said, of five recent farms where we've done that, three showed red. So it was nice that they have that relationship. They were talking about it early on. What are the things that they can do differently as they go through the year? It's never a one-year situation. Next year, things could really turn around. Mm-hmm. But for right now, that's just where we stand with what it looks like for the farm economy.
Gotcha.
So just a couple of things going on there. And secondly, we have a guest joining us today. We're going to be joined by Dylan Coleman. He's with Great Greens. Great Greens raises vegetables, hydroponically here in the Fargo area. All right, pop quiz. What does hydroponic mean? Dean? I mean, I'm holding the answer key, but I'm not.
Right, I know you do.
We're basically growing.
I'd be grasping at straws here.
Essentially, what we're doing is growing without soil. And that's in a very basic definition. But I bet Dylan's going to have a lot better grasp of that for us and want to share it. If you have questions during our discussion today, be sure to give us a call on the Red Wing Shoe line, 701-293-9000. If you're following along on our YouTube stream, great. It sounds like Facebook and Acres TV might be a little bit shaky today, but we're going to try our best to get those up and running for everyone who watches the live streams as well. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Great Greens right after this. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us today. Again, if you have questions, you are welcome to join us on the Red Wing Shoe line, 701-293-9000. So we don't have the visual aids, but we have the guy who can give us the visual aids and describe it. And that is Dylan Coleman. He's with Great Greens, growing hydroponic produce right here in Fargo. So I quizzed Dean. I said, what's hydroponics? He failed. I mean, he kind of got close.
He was taking a guess. Well, I didn't know what it was.
He's a weather guy. Yeah. It's okay. So when people hear hydroponics, what is that normally associated with, Dylan?
Yeah. Hydroponics is just growing crops out of water. There's a few different ways to grow. Most North Dakota farmers use soil, right? We use water. And so there's hydroponics and aquaponics and aeroponics, right? We use air to grow crops, but we grow our crops in water. That's what hydroponics is.
Now, how, for anybody that doesn't know, how does that work? I mean, how do these crops actually mature and grow?
How do they get rooted?
Yeah, and are they healthier for you in any way as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different studies done on hydroponics, right? And certain crop varieties will grow better using this type of system. We use a substrate, and most hydroponics do. There's several different varieties of substrate. It's really just the growing medium you put the seeds in. And so we use like a coconut core to grow our crops in. And so the crops will spend the first 2 weeks in our nursery station, and then we'll transplant them into what's called our cultivation racks. But yeah, it's called substrates. There's several different varieties. There's biogel substrates. There's different organic substrates. It really just depends on the type of hydroponics you're using.
Dylan, you said a coconut core. Mm-hmm. I don't really see a lot of palm trees here in Fargo. Yeah. How do you get all the coconut cores?
Yeah, we source our substrate from a different manufacturer of them. So, and that company is actually out of Boston, is where we bought our modular farm from. So,
and this is all done indoors, obviously. Yep. During the winter months here. Is this like a greenhouse? I mean, where it's temperature controlled?
Well, you just said modular farm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, is it like a greenhouse? We're going to need a better description than that.
Okay. Yeah. So, our farm, we use a shipping container that we've essentially retrofitted to grow crops hydroponically. And so imagine, the trucks that you see driving, semis driving on the road. We retrofitted one of their shipping containers with different hydroponic equipment to grow crops. And then we use artificial lighting, LED lighting, to grow them because there's no sunlight. So a little bit different than greenhouses.
Wow.
Now,
this sounds like it would be more expensive to produce crops than your traditional way, or is that not the case?
When you look at the efficiency of growing this way, right, mm-hmm. it's a lot more comparable than what you would think. And most people are surprised by that, right?
Yeah.
But you have to consider the square footage that we're able to grow on and then the amount of crops we're able to grow on that square footage. One, modular container could displace up to 3 acres of specialty cropped land.
Oh.
Yeah. So it pukes out produce pretty good.
Wow.
So.
Okay, and then what are you doing supplementally for sunlight? Because I think mm-hmm. about if you're in a container, grow lamps, skylights on, mm-hmm. you know, we've got short season this time of year. How are you doing that in order to, like you said, keep puking out crop?
Yeah. So we use artificial lighting. This is actually one of the areas of, you know, what we call this type of farming and industry is controlled environment agriculture. And in the last like 10 years in particular, there's been a lot of intellectual property made around the lighting for these crops to grow. If you think about the UV spectrum, and I'm not an agronomist, by the way, this is my very basic understanding of how crops grow. But if you think of the UV spectrum, right, crops react at the extremes, so the blue and the red lights, right? And so with all the technology and R&D that's gone into these LED lightings, they've gotten it to a point where you can actually stimulate growth for these crops with no sunlight.
Okay, you're right. I have had stories and remember hearing this in industry. There's a difference between like the blue and the red spectrums, mm-hmm. and depending on the crop, some of them were better with the blue versus the red. So what are you growing? Because I'm thinking, is it like leafy greens? Because I think the leafy greens do well under blue, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm not the agronomist of my farm.
That's okay.
But we use a mix. It really depends. It depends on what you're growing. It depends if you're, you know, we grow several different varieties of leafy lettuce, as well as we grow crops like arugula and basil. And we've done cilantro, kale, and so it really just kind of depends. Each crop's a little bit unique. Some crops might desire more red light versus blue light. Some crops might want a more humid climate versus a less humid. So it really just depends on the mix of crops that are in our current rotation.
Okay, so when you have the lighting, and I'm thinking, here's what I'm envisioning in my head. Inside this container, you have literally like baker's racks with all the multiple shelves in there. But the top shelves get more light than the bottom. Are you physically rotating that crop, so to speak, so that everybody continually gets more light? Or is it just uber bright, like a auto body paint booth, and everybody's getting light everywhere?
No, not quite. So it's a little bit different than what you're envisioning. So we use actually growing panels. And in those panels, there's something called a wickening strip, in which we use drip emitters to drip the water. All the nutrients is in the water. And so we use these drip emitters to drip the water from our tanks onto those wickening strips, in which case that substrate is laying on that wickening strip. And so it's not like racks where you have to move them up and down and different lighting. There's these panels. You can think of them almost as walls, plants hanging up on walls. And then there's lights all over the container stimulating their growth. So, you know, hopefully that makes a little bit more sense.
It does, because and I'm probably going to refer to this several times. You said one container can replace 3 acres of cropland.
Yeah, depending on the crop, yes.
Okay.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm thinking like leafy greens, a little bit easier to do that with, you know, okay, wheat, soybeans need a lot more space, right, because of the height of the crop.
Correct. Yeah, this crop, this way of growing will not displace real crops.
Okay. But it will supplement what we do in the produce markets, because usually produce is in some pretty high density population areas, or like here, we got to ship them in from a long way.
Exactly. Yeah. We source, I think it's 95% of our fresh produce from California, mm-hmm. Arizona, and Mexico.
As a state, you're saying?
Yeah. In the Midwest.
In the Midwest.
Midwest.
Yeah. I don't really see a lot of us growing kale right now.
No, nope. There's some farmers out there with greenhouses, right?
Right.
But even greenhouses have marginal returns, just given that the sunlight's not out as much in the winter versus my container, which is optimized all year round. It can, you know, grow 24/7. And it's the same conditions today as it was in July. It's going to be the same conditions in cold months of February and March as it is today. So,
now, Dylan, how long does it take from germination to where you can put these on the racks to start to grow?
Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks.
Germination to racks?
Yep, from planting the seed, spending 2 to 3 weeks in the nursery station, and then depending on the crop again, could be another 4 to 5 weeks in the cultivation racks.
Okay. What's your most productive crop that you're doing right now?
Yeah, this type of farming is lettuce would be the most productive, specifically leaf lettuce varieties, mm-hmm. just because of the surface area and the way they grow in our farm. Certain crops like spinach don't grow that well.
Really?
We're working on that. But leaf lettuce in particular is our best grower.
What about strawberries?
Yeah, some people have done
strawberry. I've seen that before.
Yeah, strawberries and like, and again, you're kind of getting into the larger market of controlled environment agriculture. Certain crops will grow better in certain technology, right? And so you see like a lot of strawberries and snack tomatoes grown actually in larger indoor like warehouse farming rather than container farming, right? Because they need a little bit more space. They grow over a large, you know, area versus lettuce heads. They kind of, you can kind of fit them into a more modular container like this. So
now, is there any thoughts of expanding from container to warehouse? I mean, is that in your future you're hoping? Or
yeah, I gotta watch what I say here to my other CEA colleagues.
Okay.
But it really depends on what you're trying to grow is what I'll say. If you're trying to grow snack tomatoes, that warehouse larger farm footprint is going to be what you need. And you see other companies like Revel Greens as an example or a local Bounty, right, that try this strategy of large farms. The issue that we see, at least Great Plains Greens from our perspective, is that you need a lot of capital to put a building down, right, and then just pretend like crops are going to grow in it. There's a lot of R&D that's needed to go into that versus we're able to purchase these containers, retrofit them, right, and almost just plug them into water and electricity and they start growing.
Okay.
And you can move them.
I have made this whole list of questions, Dylan. We haven't even gotten close to finishing mine off. But when we come back after bottom of the hour news, let's start with some of those things because I have my farmer focus thoughts right now. You know, things like bugs, disease, etc. I have so many things to ask, but let's do that after we come back. So we'll be right back with Dylan Coleman. He's with Great Plains Greens. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us. And not only is Dean our meteorologist, he's currently handling the indoor temperature because for some reason it feels like a sauna in this room. Whew. And it's not my fever. I know that. So, okay. We have with us Dylan Coleman. He's with Great Plains Greens. And Dean and I have just been peppering him with questions. Maybe we should have turned our mics on for some of those because we had some good ones. So Dylan, how did this start? How did you decide that you're going to be an indoor container farmer, so to speak?
Yeah, so while I was at NDSU studying, I worked for a company called Osprey Ag Science. And so that company had an investment in what was called controlled environment agriculture and these modular container technology companies. And so through an introduction of that internship, we learned about these freight farms or what is what the company is called. And we were talking to my boss at that time and he said, well, we have a farm located in 49 out of the 50 states. You know what one state we're not located in?
Bingo.
North Dakota. And so he would tease his analysts. Exactly. What do I have to do to get a container here? Eventually, there's three founders, two Great Plains Greens. The two founders and I applied for a grant through North Dakota APUC and received that grant. The purpose of it was to diversify North Dakota crops and specialty crops being one of them, right? And so we got that grant. We raised some debt and put in our own equity, and we were able to purchase our first container.
Do you just park this thing inside somewhere? I mean, is it on a set of running gear and it's in your driveway? How do you move the container?
Yeah, no, not my driveway. I think my neighbors, I'd have to get permission from them. But it's over off of Main in West Fargo. And so, yeah, it's right here in town. That's one of the benefits, right? If you think about agriculture, you can't take land from North Dakota and Iowa and plop it elsewhere, right? That land is spatial. And so, you know, we can put our container where the demand is and in more, you know, metropolitan areas. So,
okay. Man. And when we ask this question off air too, who's your customer? Where's the demand?
Yeah. So we sell to three different markets right now. One is farm to school. And so we're working with local school districts to supply fresh local produce year round, which is, you know, people see our greens in the winter and they just wonder, where have you been?
Where have you been all my life?
yeah, it's really great, right? The produce, you don't have to worry about it being frozen. You know, we can harvest and deliver within the same day. And so it's just as fresh as you have, almost as fresh as your garden. So farm to school is one of them. We also do farm to restaurants. And then we also do an online e-commerce through something that what's called the Red River Harvest Cooperative. And so we also sell online through them to just retail consumers.
And you guys don't have a quote-unquote downtime, do you? Like, I mean, the rest of our ag community.
Yeah, the ground's not
frozen. If you want to call it a downtime in the winter. Yeah. I mean, you guys don't have to worry about that.
No, yeah, we're growing crops 24/7, so no days off.
Wow.
Okay. When you said this about the farm to school, if I'm a school in a small town, which is 80% of North Dakota, and I want to be able to do this, or can you sell me like a whole setup as a warehouser or a wholesaler or a franchisor or something to get me started?
Yeah, so we're actually having conversations this week here in Fargo. We're hosting a what's called a farm to school training event where we're getting local growers and local decision makers and people who are trying to promote farm to school together and discuss what are some of those barriers preventing this from really going across the state. Obviously, we're a small operation today, but if there was opportunity and interest to expand that across the state, you know, playing our part in it is something that we're trying to learn more about. So,
I'm still fascinated by the fact that there are salad bars in high school cafeterias because we never had that in my
school.
Oh,
God, we wouldn't eat that. Are you kidding?
Well, I was in a small school. I mean, your lettuce was the shredded stuff that they slapped some French dressing on. The idea that the high school, and I can see this being used with their ag and their science students, raising the food for the cafeteria would be just tremendous in my mind.
Yeah, and I mean, there's lots of benefits from purchasing locally, right? You get to help support local businesses, which is always great. We hire a lot of these. We have a few part-time high schoolers workers for us, right? And so you're helping provide to the economic benefit of the greater, you know, Fargo-Moorhead area. Also, our crops, like I said, are just not coming in frozen and pumped full of pesticides. We don't use any chemicals, no added preservatives, right? Because we're so fresh, we harvest right before we basically deliver, right? Within 24 hours, that we don't need to do all those things. We don't grow using chemicals.
Well, you don't have any weed competition. I mean, you just have the seed of what it is you're trying to raise.
Yeah, water. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. I'm checking off my list here.
So, let's say, all right, you know, my family wants to go healthy. Where can we come to purchase your products?
Yeah, if you go to our website, there would be some directions on there on where to purchase it online, which would be the best place to go. Our website is greatplainsgreens.co.
Okay.
You've mentioned part-time labor for harvest. How are you harvesting? Is this all hand? Literally having to go along and clip greens?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And packaging and washing?
Yeah, it's a lot of the farm is automated. You know, I have a software that is the mastermind behind my operation, right? And it tells me, hey, these crops need to be harvested, or hey, you need to transplant on this date, or hey, your nutrients level is getting low, add some more nutrients, right? And so, you know, other than the planting, transplanting, and harvesting, everything else is mostly automated. And so, you know, there's a few physical tasks like harvesting, but everything else is mostly run through software.
Okay. I have watching the time here to make sure I get all these in. how much water does your system use?
Yeah, we use less than 150 gallons a month.
Okay.
Which is when you look at growing lettuce is mostly water.
It's a water user.
And so we're able to, you know, reuse and recycle a lot of our water. If you were at my farm right now, you could see that when our drip emitters drip onto our plants, any water or nutrients that isn't absorbed into the plant is then recirculated back into the water system. And so we're just super efficient at using the water that we're given. We use like 90% less water than other traditional specialty crop growers in, say, California, Arizona.
Yeah, you know, I raised lettuce in my garden, and apparently I'm doing it all wrong. Every bit of it, from the looks of this. I asked you this question, or posed it off air. You already have all the nutrient, all the fertilizer that you would need, et cetera, in the substratus. What about, do you ever have an outbreak of bugs? Or can you get a fungus or any sort of leaf disease that would cause harm?
Yeah, that's certainly still a risk. You know, because if, for example, a year ago, our HVAC unit broke, in which case we couldn't regulate the temperature, the humidity levels. And when you have so much volatility, you're going to see disease outbreak. And so, you know, when that happens, it's just kind of a manual process to remove all plants impacted. And you have to somewhat, you know, just recycle and start start new. And so there certainly is that risk, but it's much lower, right? Because we're all controlled in a container. You know, barring any mechanical failures, it's usually pretty good. Same thing with bugs. You don't really, like, we'd never used in an insecticide. We have some, like, bug traps to capture gnats, but it's really very minimal. There's not too many bugs.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Okay, so the list of questions goes longer because I'm getting listener questions texted to me. All right. In a one-to-one comparison from the hydroponic and vertical farms to the general traditional horizontal farming, is the input cost for fertilizer more or less expensive? And what's the difference when it comes to fertilizing soil versus water? Meaning, would it be more efficient to fertilize through the water versus soil?
Yeah, if you think about people who are doing our crops, again, you can't think of this compared to row crops or compared to sugar beets, right? Think of other specialty crop growers in California and Arizona. When they're spraying their fields and putting the nutrients in their soil, that doesn't mean 100% of their nutrients are going to those plants, right?
Okay.
Because there's 90% of their water that they're spraying on the plants misses the plants and doesn't ultimately get to the plant's roots. We apply the nutrients directly into the water and then put that, and then drip that water directly into the plant's roots. And so we're very efficient when it comes to fertilizer use. I haven't done necessarily the cost breakdown of it versus traditional crops, but I would imagine, just given how efficient and how we're, you know, precision ag we are, that we would be more efficient, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Seed source. As I mentioned, I don't think you're just placing an order at Gurney's.
No, no. We depending again on the seed, we have a couple preferred vendors. We use Johnny Select Seeds as one of them to purchase a lot of our our leafy and lettuce greens, and we have a few others that we purchase from as well.
Did we specifically ask, what exactly are you raising? I heard you say spinach doesn't do well, and you probably found that out by trial and error.
Yep.
But what are you raising? And do you have almost a seasonal rotation based on demand?
Yeah. So, again, think of our container as I'm always forecasting 7 weeks out today, right? Because that's the typical 45 to 49 days is the typical
harvest.
You know, plant to harvest, correct?
Okay.
And so right now we think of our target as, say, 100 pounds per week. 70% of that is going to be made up of lettuce and leafy varieties, purple lettuce, green lettuce, butterhead lettuce, so mostly lettuce. And then there's going to be some leafy green varieties, say maybe 10 to 15 pounds a week of arugula and kale. And then there's going to be some smaller increments of sorrel and basil, and then also microgreens. We do that as well.
Is there something, what's next on your list to grow? Strawberries, or what would you like to produce next?
Yeah, well,
you can say sweet garden peas. I am buying a container today.
No, well, actually what we're really excited about is we've been trialing a bunch of different varieties of kale. And so we just actually started selling kale this week. And yeah, that's been pretty exciting. It seems like there's a large market here in Fargo for them. And so, you know, the kale, the arugula, the lettuce seem to be a little bit more high volume versus the basil. Strawberries, we can't really grow in our container. They just don't grow well.
Yeah.
So it just depends, right? But kale would be something that's on our radar.
Okay.
Do lettuces bolt from, you know, like mine, get to a certain part of the season where they're just, it's that part of the season where they're not nice and leafy anymore. They want to bolt and set seed. Does that happen, or are you harvesting in such a precision time frame you don't ever worry about your plants bolting or trying to set seed?
Yeah. Again, my software will tell me, hey, you need to harvest, and you have a certain amount of days to harvest. If you let it grow too long, then there's a couple things that happens, right? Like you mentioned, there could be some sort of physical deficiencies with it that could start to show, as well as the plants just kind of roll over and die when they get too large. And so there is a time period in which we can cut it, and it's optimized for the total amount of utilization of that crop head versus the amount of waste that we have to, you know, throw away because the leaves turn bad and there's issues.
Another listener question. What's the temperature in there?
Yeah, so at day, it's always 70 degrees. At night, it's always 65 degrees. We run day for 18 hours, meaning lights are on for 18 hours, and then they're off for six.
Oh, it's like my house. And also, this was one I asked you earlier. Dylan, did you think you were going to farm?
Yeah, no, I didn't grow up with, you know, around agriculture at all. I went to NDSU, studied agricultural economics, and then eventually pursued a master's in agribusiness and applied economics also at NDSU. And just through my experiences there, learned more about agriculture. And, you know, this opportunity came up. Definitely learning to become a farmer. I won't say I'm a good farmer at all by any measure, but definitely wasn't on my radar when I was younger.
So looking down the road, and we touched on this earlier, do you guys want to expand beyond the container? I mean, is that your goal, is to be able to do stuff like strawberries and other crops as well?
Yeah. Yeah, when I talked to my other partners, you know, and we were to vision cast where we'd like to be in 5-10 yeah. years from now, right? We'd love to be at the opportunity where we have multiple containers and each container specializing on a certain crop. Mm-hmm. Because right now, if you think about it, we're growing lettuce and herbs in the same container, but they both grow at different optimal levels. Herbs like basil might desire a higher humidity versus right. what lettuce might. And so, there's, you know, when we think about the future, we would love to have multiple containers, each just growing one or two crops that are optimized for that container. And then, you know, you could almost picture it like a little dome over these containers where we could have a little processing center right now, because it's all done in my container. All my processing, everything is done in my container. Oh. So that would be the goal.
Is this a pretty rapidly growing industry, or is this still not so much?
Yeah. You know, I've actually put my partners and I put a lot of thought into this industry and where it is and where's the tech, right? Because it's ag tech. There's a lot of money, a lot of investments going into it. You know, you talk about precision ag, you talk about some of the new crop inputs that are going on. Right. And you know, there's a lot of excitement in this space. Controlled environment agriculture is still such a new industry, and it hasn't quite gone to a point where the entry-level costs of the technology make sense from an ROI perspective, unless you can find some sort of subsidized, you know, person who's
sure.
or, right. or task that can, you know, help with financing it. Just because it hasn't quite taken off like the Tesla model yet, right? When you think about the Sportster, sure. right, where they made $200,000, $150,000 cars and they weren't even that great, but that was for the early adopters. We're in that early adopter phase right now for CEA. Eventually, we got to get to that Model 3 where it's you can go buy an electric vehicle for $25,000, $30,000, right?
Yeah.
And take more of that Honda or, you know, Toyota business model to CEA. So.
I'm really hoping that this has driven a tremendous amount of questions from listeners who are going to get in touch with you. Also, those who are, you know, school dietitians and so forth, because I think there's a really very cool fit for a lot of things that you're doing. When people have those questions, though, how are they going to find you, Dylan?
Yeah, again, I would direct them to our website, greatplainsgreens.co. You'd be able to contact us on there.
All right. Sweet. And Bridget, we got a quick caller, Tom.
Oh, sure.
Tom's on line one. Tom, you got a question for our guests this afternoon.
Yeah, just real quick, and this might have been touched on already, but does he do anything with fish? So to add to the water, does he do any fish that swim around and fertilize all the plants along the way? Does he do that, or is he thinking of doing that at all?
Yeah, so we don't do any of that today. I've heard of that type of farming where there's, you know, and actually sidebar, I used to, when I interned at a bank, there was a guy who did hydroponics and then aquaponics below his hydroponics. So like he's mentioning where they were growing catfish.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then the catfish yep. would fertilize that water and the plants would absorb that fertilizer and grow.
Yeah.
And so we don't do any of that in our container today. It's not something we're thinking about. We're mostly just trying to focus and do good in one or two submarkets before we expand more into aquaponics.
Great question, Tom.
Thank you.
All right.
Dylan, we just can't thank you enough for stopping by today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Much
yeah.
appreciated.
And best of luck with the business.
Yeah.
I hope this explodes for you guys. It's a great concept. I love it.
And especially just the farm to school option.
That's
is
right?
very cool.
Yeah. No, we love being here in Fargo-Moorhead area, and we hope to continue to expand, and definitely we'll keep you guys updated.
So all those restaurateurs, they need to just get in touch with you.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. All right, folks, we want to touch on the news. When we come back, we'll wrap up with headlines and more weather.
Hey, welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:57 in the afternoon. We got a couple minutes left here. Let's recap the weather really quick. We've got a break in the clouds. We're seeing a little bit of sunshine, temperatures in the low teens. That's it across the area. And The measurable snow is done, but we can't rule out an isolated snow shower or two here as we head into the rest of the afternoon. But most areas should be good to go with temperatures in the teens today, down into the single digits tonight. And then tomorrow, back up into the mid-20s with a little bit of a breeze out of the south at about 10 to 25. And then a blustery day on Wednesday. We're going to see a cold front come through in the morning. We'll probably see some snow showers with that front because it's Arctic air that is going to be blasting in from Canada. And when I say blasting in, you're going to notice very windy conditions on Wednesday, northwest at about 20 to 40. So that's going to produce a lot of blowing snow. Those east-west roadways might be a problem on Wednesday. Again, not expecting a lot of additional accumulation, but I do expect some travel trouble on Wednesday if you are going out and about. And then things will calm down Wednesday night as high pressure builds in. A cold day Thursday in the teens. But the good news, like we were talking earlier, if you didn't catch it, it looks like we're above freezing. We're into the 30s this weekend. That's great for tailgating, for the Bison game, where you won't freeze. It will be a little bit breezy, especially later in the day on Saturday. So for Bridget and myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.